Good afternoon, and welcome to Who's in the Kitchen. You're listening to WDRT Community Radio, coming from Viroqua, Wisconsin, in the Driftless area, 91.9 FM, and streaming live on the internet at WDRT.org, where you can listen to this show and previous shows. We have quite a large archive now of Who's in the Kitchen shows, as well as Digging Deep, which airs the last Saturday of the month. All these shows are at noon on Saturday, and I'm so glad that you tuned in. I'm Philothea Beeson. I have been interviewing people over the last year or so about different regimes and diets, and I've talked to vegetarians, vegans, keto diets, and now today I have Kitty Pitcher, and she has been on a carnivore diet for a while now, and so I just thought I would share. I'm not advocating any particular diet, but I am wanting to know what people have experienced and learned along the way, and why they are doing or did do at one time a particular diet. What's really interesting, thank you, Kitty, for being on my show, Kitty Pitcher, who lives just in rural Viroqua. Kitty has tried all kinds of different diets over the years, so it's not like she's never been a vegan or something like that. You have tried different
regimes. I've never been a vegan.
Not a vegan.
But I've always been interested in nutrition. And as things became popular, or not so much popular, but came into my awareness, and they sounded intriguing, and it was kind of the current focus of dietary guidelines and that type of thing, I would give it a try and see how it went. So I kind of have a gradual progression from the standard American diet that I grew up with as a kid to carnivore these days.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think maybe that's a way we can organize our conversation, is to go through kind of chronologically what you've tried over the years and how you've come to the conclusion that you have about carnivore, which I think you really do feel good about and recommend, and at least it's worked for you, and why it's worked for you. I know Kitty is really a researcher. She really does, you know, she looks deeply into things, and I know you aren't just loosely following a particular regime, but you really have given it your attention and found experts in the field that have informed you. So what would you say is the standard American diet that you were raised on?
Well, the standard American diet is one of a lot of processed food.
It is, you know, now, isn't it?
And it was even when I was growing up. Uh-huh. You know, Trix breakfast cereal, you know, crackers in boxes, candy, you know, packaged cake mixes, you know, that type of thing. Mm-hmm. And so it was just how everybody ate. It had been different prior to World War II, but after World War II, there was this definite trend towards more processed food, convenience food.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, there was an article in Life magazine that focused on another interest of mine, the excessive use of plastic, but it was an article called introducing the idea of throwaway living. You know, why should the modern housewife be having to spend 40 hours in the kitchen, you know, doing this, cooking this, cleaning this, when she can use something once and throw it away? So it was a picture of a family with all kinds of things floating in the air around them that could be used once and thrown away. So that whole convenience. Protocol,
mm-hmm.
Yes, also transferred to our food.
Right. And so you could probably identify processed foods with the stuff that comes in packages.
Pretty much, right? Anything that has a barcode. Yeah.
Right.
And it is a modern invention.
Mm-hmm. And along with that goes preservatives.
Yes.
Because in order to keep things on the shelf, you have to add something that's a preservative. So you see there's preservatives in almost everything, and they will label it as some kind of chemical or addition, you know. But now some things say no preservatives, then you go, oh, well, then I wonder how long the shelf life is if it has no preservatives. But anyway, I found out that some preservatives interfere with the assimilation of the nutritive value of the food. which is, that would be the opposite of what, right. But you preserve the food, but it doesn't do you any good, or you don't get the vitamin B, or you don't get the, you know, whatever that you're supposed to be getting.
But at the same time, if something has a very long shelf life, that's a little concerning, just because when you look in nature, things do not have a long shelf life at all. So it was that whole focus on convenience, and then there was a big focus because heart disease was increasing. And there was a scientist who came up with a hypothesis that saturated fat and cholesterol was the reason. And so that became a big push in the 1950s and the 1960s of eat low fat, high carb, because that was supposedly the healthiest way to eat. That has turned out to be a disastrous 70-year experiment on the human population. And it was based on faulty science in the first place. This particular researcher was very charismatic, very strong personality, could argue anybody into anything, and he prevailed. But for the research papers that he did, either he cherry-picked his research to support his hypothesis rather than trying to disprove his hypothesis, which is what science is supposed to do. And it just became the prevailing thought. And it is out there still today that fat is bad. And it's the exact opposite.
Like fat makes you fat.
Right.
Or eating cholesterol in foods gives you high cholesterol, which is just kind of a simplistic way of thinking. It really isn't that simple. It's not that, you know, direct. And I got my information from a book called Good Fat, Bad Fat.
An excellent book.
And it was really showed you that money is necessary to do research. And if you don't have any money for, say, you know, to prove that fat doesn't make you fat, and you don't have any money to do the research, then you can't fight that general, you know, misleading or maybe questionable point of view. So it's even research can be skewed by money, right?
Most research is skewed, because really the question you have to ask yourself, you know, when you look at a dramatic headline is, who funded this? Who benefits from the results of this research? And there are many people out there these days that closely examine these research papers and kind of pick them apart to show that, oh, this result was the preferred result because this was funded by big food, big pharma, you know, the sugar industry, right, trying to show that, right, fat is bad. So yes, you have to be very, very skeptical of the headlines, because that only is there to grab your attention. But then even the conclusion itself might be different than the headline too. You know, it's just all about getting people's attention and influencing how they make their grocery purchases.
Well, it is interesting when you look at labels or the little blurbs on packages, the little extra things that they say, low cholesterol, no trans fats, or something like that, or, well, they change. The advertisers just change. Once, you know, so now it says, you know, low carb. It used to say low cholesterol. You know, I mean, they just change the label. This is their little advertising gimmicks for whatever is popular. So, yeah, and I think we found that out with plastic, because both Kitty and I are on Veroco Plastic Free. We found out about greenwashing, which is these little blurbs and little symbols and pictures on packages that make you think the packaging or the contents of the product are good for the environment, or they're healthy, or they're natural, or they're, you know, they're meaningless terms. But it's in. Now it's in to say that something has, you know, what? No whatever.
All natural ingredients,
yeah,
or something
all
like
natural,
that.
Earth-friendly. I mean, things that have absolutely no scientific definition.
Right.
So, you know, packaging and processing, it just goes on.
Well, and I think what we have to realize is that everyone out there is trying to sell us something. mm-hmm. and they are brilliant mm-hmm. marketers. Mm-hmm. We buy it hook, line, and sinker, mm-hmm. and we don't really know, or I guess we trust that it's true, mm-hmm. but it often is not. So it's greenwashing, you know, for environmentally friendly products, but it's also greenwashing, we'd have to call it something else, but for food.
Mm-hmm. Right. So you moved from the standard diet. You started really paying attention to what, you know, what you wanted to cut out and what you wanted to pursue. And where did you move? Did you move to vegetarian or
just more healthful
eating?
I believed what the government guidelines were saying, to eat less fat, you know, low fat, high carb. So, you know, when I was in my teens, you know, in my very early 20s, you know, I was trying that out. And what I discovered, you know, I've always read a lot about nutrition and was trying to do what I thought was the healthiest. And what I was finding is that I wasn't overweight, but I had 6 pounds that I could not get rid of. And I was eating a low-fat, high-carb diet, just like they were prescribing. I was eating very little, few calories, and I could not lose that weight.
Wow.
I could not lose that mm-hmm. weight. And then I heard about Atkins. And he was really one of the modern promoters of a higher-fat, low-carb diet. And so I went on Atkins, which was less than 20 carbs a week. I lost my 6 pounds in a week, and I never looked back. So I stayed on Atkins for quite a while. And the whole premise of Atkins was, if you wanted to lose weight, you know, you really get down to very few carbs, and then you gradually reintroduce to find that sweet spot where you can eat so many carbs and still maintain your weight. So mm-hmm. I was on that for quite a while.
Well, can you define carbs for people who are not really sure? What's included in carbs?
Carbohydrates are plant-based products. So there's meat, protein, there's fat, and then there's carbohydrates. So most everything in our modern society is carbohydrates. You know, whether it is a carrot, whether it's a cracker, whether it's a slice of bread,
flour,
whether it's an apple, flour, they are all carbs, and they all turn into sugar in our digestive system.
Mm-hmm. So you might not think you're eating sugar. You might think you've cut out sugar, but if you're eating carbs, they will convert to sugar.
It breaks down into sugar. Mm-hmm. There are what are called slow carbs, more complex carbs, that supposedly break down more slowly, but they all end up as sugar. And the problem is that when we eat sugar, carbs, our glucose, because that's what it breaks down into, our glucose goes sky high. And then our pancreas has to send out insulin in order to bring down the glucose in our bloodstream, because we only have 4 grams, about a teaspoon, of glucose in our bloodstream, our entire circulatory system at any time. And so when we eat a simple carb or even a complex carb, that goes up, and our body is frantically trying to get rid of that, because if we have too much glucose in our bloodstream for too long, we go into a coma and we die. I mean, it's very serious, so our body takes it very seriously. And so when we are eating carbs, and especially if we follow the current recommendations of 3 meals a day, 3 high-carb, low-fat meals a day, with snacks, our glucose is constantly being replenished, and insulin is constantly high because it is trying to get it out of our bloodstream by moving it into the cells.
And that's really the idea of carbs. I mean, we had this idea, carbs give you energy, so you need carbs. you know, if you're in sports, you should have carbs because they give you quick energy, you know. But the problem is a lot of people aren't really using that energy. You know, they aren't expending that kind of energy, and they are not keeping up with the carbs that they're taking in. And the whole idea of the insulin, this is something that would have just been coming to our understanding in the last 10 or 15 years, that you become insulin resistant, and that is the onset of type 2 diabetes, which is not just for older people now, but it's coming earlier and earlier with kids, you know, 11 and 12 years old are showing up with type 2 diabetes, which is basically insulin resistance. And that takes place over a period of years, I've learned. So you can go and have your blood tested and find out, you know, how you are. You're fine. Then suddenly 1 year, you're diabetic and you didn't even know it. Well, your insulin resistance was growing over those years. They don't test you for insulin resistance. So we've talked about, it's a good idea to ask your doctor to give you an insulin resistance test.
A fasting insulin test.
Fasting insulin test is
the most important blood test to have.
Mm-hmm.
And it's one that doctors don't know about, most of them, because they are not educated about it, because big pharma makes billions by treating symptoms, not by curing an illness mm-hmm. or a condition.
Mm-hmm.
And so most doctors are not aware of even asking or, you know, recommending that test to their clients. And yes, so a person can be hyperinsulinemia, having too much insulin in their system consistently for 10 to 15 years before their fasting glucose or their hemoglobin A1C starts indicating that they are becoming pre-diabetic and then diabetic. Mm-hmm. So had we tested for fasting insulin, people would have known years ago that they should mm-hmm. change their diet. But the problem is, when you look at the diet recommended by the American Dietetics Association, it is low fat, high carb. It's the very diet that is causing the problem in the mm-hmm. first place. And type 2 diabetes used to be called adult onset, because only older people got it after a lifetime
right.
of abusing their system. And now, as you mentioned, very young children get it, because, you know, when you and I were growing up, you know, there were treats around, but nothing like now. Kids nowadays are eating highly processed food all the time.
Right.
And eat very little real food. Mm-hmm. Because of the convenience right. issue, and it has become a very serious problem.
A lot of snacking in between meals, and usually those snacks are usually processed foods. You know.
Oh, exactly.
Yeah,
yeah.
We call them junk food.
The thing that's really important to understand is that hyperinsulinemia does not just cause type 2 diabetes; it causes most of the chronic non-communicable diseases that we are facing these days. I've heard Alzheimer's called type 3 diabetes.
Really?
I've heard PCOS, mm-hmm. polycystic ovarian syndrome, called type 4 diabetes. I've heard cancer called type 5 diabetes, because cancer cells need 400 times the amount of energy, because they, due to mitochondrial inefficiency, they are fermenting, and so they need a lot of glucose. And so when a person eats carbs, you know, either with a intending to like prevent cancer, it's not doing it. And if a person is having cancer, they are feeding those cancer
yes.
cells every
yes.
time they eat these simple carbs.
Wow. It's just really, yeah, an amazing thing. And it's kind of, it's hard to actually get the true information. And we keep getting more and more insight, more and more different studies, and having things that we always believe, like butter was bad for you and eggs were bad for you, and now, no, eggs are good for you. No, only the egg white is good for you. And then, no, egg is only good for you if you have the whole egg. And then you find out that, you know, but only eggs that were raised from chickens that were raised on, you know, bugs and grass were good for you. But eggs that are raised in a coop aren't good for you because those chickens are raised on grain and that's carb. And, oh, there's just so much to understand.
Right, and it's actually very, very simple. You know, when you look in the wild, all animals, they know exactly what to eat to be healthy. You don't see unhealthy, fat animals in the wild. You know, koalas evolved to eat eucalyptus leaves. Cows evolved to eat grass. Humans evolved to eat fatty meat. We did not evolve to eat plants. We have to keep in mind a little something called the Ice Age. You know, there were no plants or very few plants or only available for a very short time during the year. So if you go back far enough, all species ate meat, you know, and we were strong, robust people. The advent of agriculture only came with the end of the last ice age around 8 to 10,000 years ago that allowed people to become more sedentary, to stop being the hunters that they were, the apex predators that we were before the advent of agriculture. And once agriculture was introduced, our height lessened by about 5 inches for men, and I think a little bit more for women. Brain size decreased. Bones were seen to be much more frail and fragile. The femur, which is an indication of malnutrition, became smaller. There was dental cavities, infectious diseases, all kinds of things happened not over thousands of years, but immediately when we switched from a high fatty meat diet to basically the convenience of a plant-based, grain-based diet, which allowed people to stay in the same place and live in closer proximity. But it was a huge shift, and there is one author, Jared Diamond, that said it was probably the worst decision that humans ever made because it affected us, our health, so negatively. It allowed the raising of a class system. Some people owned land, some people didn't. Wars, fighting to protect your land and things like that. So, I mean, there's a lot of good things about civilization, don't get me wrong, but there are a lot of downsides that were a direct result of making that decision to go from being hunter-gatherers to agriculturists.
Now, one of my points with you was that the gathering part was not necessarily meat. The gathering part was like wild berries or wild fruits or something like that.
Which looked nothing like what we find at the grocery store. Everything, all the vegetables and fruits have been bred often within the last 50 years. Yeah, so if you look at how we evolved, how all animals evolved, the animals that evolved are still eating the food that they evolved to eat. And they know what to eat to be healthy. Humans are the only animal that don't know how to be healthy. Despite all the research, despite how smart we do not know how to be healthy. And if we just look back to how we evolved and started eating, number one, real food, you know, just forget processed food completely because that is just making us fat and sick. And at least choosing natural foods, you know, that don't necessarily come in a package or a box. I mean, that is one step towards becoming much healthier. But then you can go even a little bit farther into eating I transitioned after Atkins into a paleo diet. I learned about paleo, which is trying to mimic in a modern world what we ate as we were evolving.
Mm-hmm.
Again, they really didn't emphasize the fact that the vegetables and fruits that we eat today are very different than they were back then. You know, they were not as sweet, and it's so it was definitely, you can't compare, you know, the type of gathering that they did in the past to what we can gather
right.
at the grocery store.
Right. I'm going to take a little station break, and then we're going to get back to paleo. And I'm talking with Kitty Pitcher. She lives here in Viroqua, and she just knows a lot about food, mostly with kind of experimenting with herself and doing a lot of research. And you're listening to Who's in the Kitchen on WDRT 91.9 FM. And streaming live on the internet at WDRT.org. You can listen to this show or share it with other people. It'll be on our archive. And so we'll get back because I don't want to interrupt this conversation about paleo. So moving away from standard diet of the 1950s to a Atkins diet and then to a paleo diet. I'm sure some people have been aware of it, and maybe some people have never heard of paleo, but it became, you know, something that people started talking about and hearing that word more. And so paleo, as you say, is kind of going back in time, but, you know, we didn't have the celery and the strawberry and, you know, the things that we have now we consider fruits and vegetables. That's not what you found in the wild. Not at all what you found down in the wild.
No, not at all. You were lucky to find anything. Apples were the size of a crab apple, you know, mm-hmm. way as we were evolving.
And seasonal.
And very
seasonal.
You
know, like there's 2 weeks. And then there's, you know, is there any preservation? So that's where we get into. Let's see if we can keep apples, you know, going by cooking them, drying them, fermenting them, whatever, to kind of keep mm-hmm. them longer. But in the wild, you would just eat them while they're fresh, and then they're gone. There was drying, and I know that natives often did some, you know, drying of fruits.
Mm-hmm.
And then they're lighter weight, and they can be packed up or they can mixed with meat, you know, or something like that. But anyway, so paleo, what was your diet on the paleo diet?
Well, I did paleo for about 25 years.
Really?
Yeah. And I was still into the chicken breasts are better than fatty meat belief, you know, even on the paleo diet, because it didn't really mm-hmm. push fatty meat, which the carnivore mm-hmm. diet does, the mm-hmm. keto diet does.
Mm-hmm. So boneless, skinless
yeah,
chicken.
a lot of chicken. I think if I never have a chicken breast again, I'm going to be happy. And then I would choose whole vegetables and fruit. You know, and so I was eating a morning smoothie, you know, with lots of spinach and beets and
banana. Was that part of it or not?
I thought bananas were too high carbs, so
okay.
I didn't do bananas.
Okay. A lot of people start with a banana,
right? Because it's sweet and mm-hmm. high carb. Yeah, and you know, maybe some almond milk and, you know, just all kinds of things. I was reading all these different books, you know, and getting recipes. And I have recently, as I've delved into keto, which doing paleo, I noticed over the years my fasting glucose was creeping up a little bit.
Really?
Yeah. And so I became aware of keto, which is a low-carb diet. A low-carb diet is considered 100 grams of carbs or less in a day. Most people eating a standard processed food diet eat hundreds of carbs a day, you know, and they're very simple carbs, usually broken down into that sugar and glucose.
Mm-hmm.
So a keto diet is 50 grams or less, ketovore is 20 grams or less, and then carnivore is zero. Carnivore is mm-hmm. all animal-based mm-hmm. food. So I started looking into a low-carb, higher-fat food choices, which moved me more from chicken into beef. And then very quickly, I went from low carb to keto to ketovore to carnivore, because the more I read, the more I realized that the carbs, even what we consider healthy carbs, have a downside. There are plants want to procreate, just like people do. And so they have built-in chemical properties that protect them from being eaten by insects, by animals, you know, by other predators, and in fact by humans. And one example of one of those plant toxins is gluten, which is all the rage these days. You know, gluten upsets people's stomachs. Think about beans and gas. We laugh about it, but the bean is the seed of the plant. Most of the protections are in the seeds because those are the babies. You know, the plant wants them to flourish and grow into another plant. So there are tens of thousands of plant toxins that we are not aware of.
Oh, interesting.
Mm-hmm. One that kind of took me surprise is the fact that almonds contain cyanide. They don't tell you that when you buy them. And I was using almond flour if I wanted to make some grain-like paleo substance. I have occasionally used almond milk, almond butter, almonds, and they say that 40 almonds a day would put you at the high limit of cyanide. Mm-hmm. And it's accumulative.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like, okay, I'm not doing almonds anymore.
Well, is the cyanide mainly in the
nut?
The coating, you know, the skin. If you soak the almonds and take the skin off, is that better? Is that where the cyanide is?
I guess I don't know exactly where it is, because they talk about the almond milk, which is no skins, you know, the almond meal, almond flour. So I don't really know, but those are just some examples of the many, many toxins that are in plants, the protective toxins. One of the YouTubers that I follow, Anthony Chafee, he's a neurosurgeon, United States trained neurosurgeon. And when he was learning about cancer biology, his professor was talking about all the carcinogenic compounds in plants. And he made the comment about how he doesn't eat plants. And everybody in class is kind of looking around like, what's the joke? Like, plants are still good for you, aren't they? And this professor said, I don't eat vegetables. I don't let my children eat vegetables. Plants are trying to kill you.
And this, of course, really sounds extreme.
Yes. Yeah. And I mean, of course, it was a dramatic statement, but he meant it. I mean, he did not eat plants.
Mm-hmm.
And that is really what caused Anthony Chafee to look into this, you know, because we have been taught, we've bought hook, line, and sinker that plants are healthy.
Right. You know,
and they have all these toxins. Right. Plus, there's nothing in a plant, no nutrients in plants that you cannot get from meat. And there are many essential nutrients in meat that you cannot get from plants. And we've kind of forgotten that.
Mm-hmm.
So when a person eats a carnivore diet, a higher fat, a zero or low carb diet, you are getting all the nutrients you need. They are completely bioavailable.
Mm-hmm.
And it is in the proportions that humans need, because that is how we evolved.
Mm-hmm. Yep, that's really interesting. Well, the animals eat the plants, and they know how to process the plants.
Especially the ruminants, and with the multiple stomachs, yes.
So we get the value of the plants through the meat. That would be the theory, right?
Well, what happens is that the ruminant eats the plant. They have bacteria in their various stomachs that break down the plants into fatty acids, which then they absorb. So the cow is getting the fat, And then these bacteria die, which are then absorbed as protein. So the cow ends up getting protein and fat, just like we do.
Mm-hmm.
But they have this magical system that turns the plant into a very highly nutritious
mm-hmm.
meat that humans mm-hmm. can then eat. You know, back in the day, there were megafauna, you know, the woolly mammoth and the auroch and these huge animals that we could kill and, you know, hunt and kill, and then we could eat on them, or our small tribe could eat on them for a very long period of time.
Mm-hmm.
They died out. If something happened, like worldwide, they were just like gone.
Mm-hmm.
And so then we had to rely on smaller animals. And so that turned us into better hunters, because these large animals couldn't move very fast. You know, we could hunt them quite easily and successfully, but when you're running after, you know, a gazelle or, you know, whoever, we had to learn to be very good hunters
mm-hmm.
so we could continue eating the diet that
now,
is most nutritious.
What about animals that eat animals?
They are carnivores.
Mm-hmm. Is their meat good for human beings to eat? Or should you only eat ruminants? Or, you know...
The thought in the carnivore community is that the ruminant system just creates a product that is kind of detoxed through the system.
Mm-hmm.
And that if you eat pork or chicken, just a single stomach... you are getting more of what the animal ate rather than it being turned into something completely different with the ruminant.
Mm-hmm.
So most, mm-hmm. it's not that, you know, other meats aren't eaten, because any meat is more nutritious mm-hmm. than a plant-based diet,
mm-hmm.
but beef seems to be the favorite.
Mm-hmm. Now, fish tend to eat on other fish until it really
mm-hmm.
gets down to the plankton or whatever, the small protozoa or whatever, which some of the lower food chain animals eat. But so fish are considered to be really healthful for us.
Oh, fish, yes,
right.
Definitely.
Right.
I personally am not a fish eater. Mm-hmm.
I
didn't grow up on it, so mm-hmm. it's not my favorite choice.
And it sounds like, in talking with you, you mainly eat beef. That
right now,
really
I'm mainly
the meat
eating
of
beef.
Choice.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And what about the whole idea of eating the whole animal? I mean, do you eat organ meats? Do you eat meats, you know, made with the bone in? What do you think about that?
I think that is certainly the most reasonable way to eat any animal, you know, to respect its life by eating nose to tail, and our ancestors certainly did that. There's organ meats most of us haven't grown up enjoying, and so it's a foreign texture, a foreign taste. I've heard that organ meats can be ground up in small quantities into ground beef, so you get the benefit without changing the
mm-hmm.
taste or the mm-hmm. texture, because I have never been a fan of liver, not even as a kid, especially as a kid.
Kidneys?
Yeah,
you
so
know.
Definitely eating organs,
mm-hmm.
but in proportion to how large it was in the animal.
Mm-hmm.
You know, some people are eating organ meats all the time, and you have to think there was a single liver, a single heart, you know, in a huge animal. You know, so you have to consider eating it in proportion
mm-hmm.
to the rest of the muscle meat.
Mm-hmm. So you went from paleo, then you said you kind of moved on from paleo.
Very quickly.
Yes.
And
keto, I wanted you to spell keto. Is it K-E-T-O?
Yes, K-E-T-O. Just, it means
and
ketogenic. And basically,
what does that mean?
That means that when you are eating a lot of carbohydrates, you are, as I mentioned, producing glucose, and you're kind of running your body on glucose. And glucose is kind of like kindling. You know, it's there and it's gone. You know, and so your glucose spikes when you eat something, and then it crashes and then you're hungry again, so you eat some more, mm-hmm. you know, and your blood sugar goes up and down all day long, and your insulin is going up and down all day long, and that is really considered to be very detrimental and basically behind the insurgence of all these non-communicable chronic diseases that we are facing now, and that have that have really increased over the last 70 years. And when you look at graphs that chart obesity, that chart type 2 diabetes, that chart Alzheimer's, and you match that to the chart of carb intake, it's like the exact same curve. You know, everything is going up, and it's because of our diet. As we were evolving, you know, of course there were accidents and infectious diseases and childbirth issues and things like that. You know, people were lucky to live to adulthood just because of all those issues. But nowadays, you know, everything is considered more chronic, and it is seems to be stemming from our diet. Because, I mean, you and I grew up when people were skinny. You know, you look at crowd seams from the 40s and 50s, and people were skinny. You look at a crowd scene today, and everybody has, you know, it's called a beer belly, a wheat belly, it's a carb belly. And they are very, very heavy. And that, it's very scary because that is becoming normal. And little children that are growing up today, many of them are already overweight because of the diet they're eating, but they think it's normal. And they are heading in the direction of poor metabolic health. As most adults are already facing that. There are markers of metabolic health, five of them. One of them is waist size. If a woman's waist size is 35 inches or less, that's considered okay, and for a man, 40 inches or less. When you have that central obesity, which is different than fat on your butt, you know, which is inert, the fat that is being gathered or deposited around your organs is metabolically active, and that is very damaging to the organs. It interferes with everything. So a quick way to see if you are struggling with metabolic health is simply measure your waist, right around the belly button, not below, you know, like guys do with their belt is below. It's belly button. The other one is your fasting blood glucose. It should be under 100. Your blood pressure. Many people struggle with blood pressure. Without medication, it should be less than 130 over 85, both those numbers less. And then, you know, cholesterol, which is, you know, tied with that whole heart fat hypothesis. Your HDL is actually way more important than your LDL. It should be at least over 40 for men, over 50 for women. And then your triglycerides should be under 150. That is a more important factor. And so statistics are showing that 80% of the people in America have at least one metabolic marker that is showing poor health. Many of them have many more than that. And so we are running around as a very sick nation, and the symptoms of these illnesses are being treated with medication because, as I said, the big pharma does not want to cure disease. A patient cured is a customer lost. So there is a lot of money, as you mentioned, in big food, big pharma, that is motivating much of the dietary recommendations that are being given, that are being given to us today.
Right. Well, I think we are becoming more aware that training of doctors involves very little related to nutrition. Now, they may be changing now, but we know that maybe the doctors that we go to are in their 40s, 50s, or 60s, didn't really have that much education in nutrition. We weren't really looking at nutrition related to health, unbelievably. But now we are more, but it's not like they're nutritionists. They're not. And also, as you say, the pharmaceutical companies have really worked hard to, you know, wine and dine the doctors
and educate
and promote different things. And then all the advertising that's on television, it used to not be legal.
Mm-hmm.
And now just advertising all kinds of brands of medication and ask your doctor if you can take this and you can take that. And just grooming everybody to think that health will come from getting the right medication to treat these chronic conditions, which they're not communicable diseases. They're things that are rising from, you know, unhealthy living and unhealthy diet.
Right. And it's interesting, when you take your pet to the vet with the problem, first thing they ask is, what are you feeding it? Doctors don't do that. And it's really interesting because you're right that doctors are becoming more aware of nutrition, but there is something called the standard of care, that if somebody presents with a certain condition, whether it's type 2 diabetes or, you know, whatever it might be, you know, it can be, you know, some mental concern, there is a prescribed way of treating that condition. And doctors that deviate from that are penalized. I mean, they are told by their governing body, you can't do that. You have to do standard of care. And so there have been a couple renegade doctors who just insisted, you know, they started talking to their patients about making these nutritional changes, at least go low carb, you know, or if you have something extreme, health condition, you know, go lower and lower carb as you can. Initially, keto was thought to be a weight loss hack. Most people that contacted doctors did it because they were fat and they wanted to lose weight. And when they came back 3 months later, they had lost weight. But then they'll also say, oh, but I used to have arthritis in my knee and it's gone. I used to have brain fog and I feel so much clearer. Mm-hmm. It's like the doctors that were coming aware of keto were realizing that it was affecting in a positive way much more than just weight loss. And so what they have since discovered is that type 2 diabetes is 100% reversible.
And you know, that's not really the general message.
Not at all. It's a chronic, live with it,
and
take
you
your
live
meds
with it,
forever.
You'll never be able to change it, and you'll never be able to reverse it. Now, I came away feeling, I don't believe that. I just don't believe that. I read enough to know that just can't be true. And I'm type 2 diabetes, and I mean, I'm not overweight or anything. I do have kind of the round waist and always did kind of have that shape. But, you know, as I get older, so then, you know, surprise, surprise, I'm type 2 diabetic.
Mm-hmm.
I thought I was eating low carb, but not no carb. I certainly wasn't really eating no carb. But they handed out these sheets to me, and I just kind of threw them in the trash. It just seemed like this is like information that's 15 or 20 years old. I mean, you can just find out much more about nutrition than I was getting really from the general medical profession. So I did the machines, and I did my walking, my workouts, and everything, and got these sheets of diet that just didn't seem to really correspond to what I thought was really healthy dieting.
Right.
And the message pretty much was, you'll have to live with diabetes for the rest of your life.
Right. And so it's important to understand that with these metabolic diseases, which they all are, it's 95% nutrition and 5 or 10% lifestyle. You don't even have to exercise. If you just change your diet, you will dramatically reverse any of, I've got a list here of the illnesses that are associated with this. You know, it's type 2 diabetes, high blood pressure, obesity, heart disease, fatty liver disease, gallstones, PCOS, sleep apnea, gout, mood disorders, and much, much more. Mm-hmm. Doctors have been finding that their patients come back needing perhaps no insulin or much less of the medications that they'd been on because eating high fat, low carb is just turning things around in a way that the doctors didn't anticipate. They just mm-hmm. thought they'd lose a few pounds.
Right.
And most of these doctors were obese, did have either type 2 diabetes or pre-diabetes, had brain fog, had these issues, you know, and a lot of them used themselves first as a guinea pig and mm-hmm. had amazing results. Mm-hmm. And then they started suggesting them to their clients. But also many of these doctors had to leave the system that they were in because they were not allowed to prescribe mm-hmm. or even recommend mm-hmm. a low-carb diet because mm-hmm. it wasn't standard of care. In order mm-hmm. for doctors and hospitals and nursing homes and schools to get funding, they have to follow the dietary mm-hmm. guidelines. Mm-hmm. And the most recent dietary guidelines were done in 2020. It was a 20-member committee that came up with them. There really were very few changes from the last 50 years. But all of them had ties to big food and big pharma.
Oh, dear.
One member had 150 ties, you know, where they were getting money in some fashion. So the people, the government agencies that we trust to tell us the truth mm-hmm. have been mm-hmm. motivated by personal gain mm-hmm. for the last 70 years. And as we look around today at the condition that people are in, you know, not only the, you know, elderly, but, you know, younger people and children as well. I mean, that's the result. And these dietary guidelines have to be followed by schools. So our children are eating this high-carb diet and hospitals. So when you're sick, you're getting bad food that's not going to promote healing and nutrition. Our nursing homes, which are just a travesty. You know, they are eating a high-carb diet. Mm-hmm. And there's one right. gentleman, mm-hmm. Hal Cramston. He has 5 or 6 assisted living facilities in Arizona, and he is feeding his residents a low-carb, high-fat diet. He's kind of sneaking it in, mm-hmm. you know, because they're so used to mm-hmm. wanting the treat and stuff like that. He's had residents leave and go home because they're that much better. Reducing the medications that they're on, being really? Able, you know, instead of in an Alzheimer's fog, being able to mm-hmm. have a conversation and know where they are. It just has been a dramatic
That's amazing.
Change.
Yeah.
But he is one individual, you know, kind of his own boss. And, you know, other nursing homes have to follow the dietary mm-hmm. guidelines.
I'm talking with Kitty Pitcher. We have been moving toward the carnivore diet, which is what she's following now. We've sort of traced through the different ways of people have learned to start eating more healthfully. And you're listening to Who's in the Kitchen on WDRT Community Radio, coming from Viroqua, Wisconsin, 91.9 FM, and streaming live on the internet at WDRT.org. I wanted to go over the idea of fat, and I don't know how much you feel qualified to talk about it, but there are fats and there are fats. And we talk about saturated fats and unsaturated fats and polyunsaturated fats and fats from vegetables and seeds and various things. Have you learned much about mm-hmm. fats? Because
yes.
you were saying high fat is good, and I'm thinking, I want to know which fats
yeah.
you're talking
no,
about.
No, that's a very good point. Okay. High saturated fat.
And that means meat fats?
Pretty much. Saturated fat means it's a, you know, molecular structure where there are no open spaces. So it's very stable. Mm-hmm. And that's what animal fat mm-hmm. is, whether it's butter, whether it's the fat on your steak, whether it's mm-hmm. lard, it's very stable.
Yeah. In fact, didn't they used to can and put fat on the top to preserve
yeah.
things?
Yeah. Right. Monounsaturated fat, which is like olive oil and avocado oil, that has one open seat. That's where the mono comes from.
Mm-hmm.
And so that is a little less stable than saturated fat, but still fairly stable mm-hmm. and thought to be, mm-hmm. you know, somewhat healthy. It's the polyunsaturated fats, the so-called vegetable oils that are actually seed oils
mm-hmm.
that are poly, mean many open seats in this molecule. And so they are very easily oxidized. And the combination of grains, sugar, and seed oils, which is every single processed food item out there,
mm-hmm.
is highly inflammatory. And inflammation as a result of eating this poor diet is really what has caused all this disruption,
okay.
you know, in our
system. So that is a word that people are hearing more and more. Inflammation is the basis of all kinds of diseases.
Right.
And yet you don't really, I thought inflammation was like a rash or something, so I didn't really understand. Inflammation is a response of the body, and you don't necessarily feel it. It's
right.
not like you get hot or something. Inflammation might be a misleading term for people, you know, picturing what's happening. But inflammation is behind cancer, arthritis,
any itis.
So, yeah, it's very, very interesting. Well, you know, just as we're winding up, can you give some ideas of sources that you have used that have helped you? Are there some doctors or some books that people could read about the paleo diet that kind of helps you? I mean, the carnivore diet
mm-hmm.
that helps you, you know, feel like you understand more and have a basis for this? I mean, I know
sure.
you have read.
Oh, yeah. No,
so who are some of the doctors that are promoting this?
For the more keto carnivore space, I have been listening to podcasts. Anthony Chafee is my favorite. He does at least one podcast a week. He is a neurosurgeon, as I mentioned, but he is passionate about spreading the word. Most of these doctors are. You know, they are not selling something. They are devoting hours and hours of their time just to spread the word because they got into the medical field to help people.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what they want to do. So Dr. Ken Berry, he is another one. He is a family practitioner in Tennessee, does a lot of podcasts. Philip Ovadia, he is a heart surgeon who also advocates the carnivore diet. So there are many. If you just go to YouTube and type in carnivore mm-hmm. diet, all kinds of choices will come up, but they
mm-hmm.
are
okay.
very helpful.
And for one last minute, what do you eat? What do you eat for breakfast?
I eat chuck roast for mm-hmm. breakfast.
Mm-hmm.
What I do is I will make a roast in the crock pot. I'm not a big cook. I don't enjoy cooking. So I just throw it overnight in the crock pot. You know, I shred it up. I put butter on top of it. I do salt. Carnivore is considered beef, butter, bacon, eggs, and water.
Okay.
And then when you are eating something that is fully nourishing, you don't get hungry. You don't need three meals a day. You don't need three snacks a day. So I eat breakfast and I eat supper. And for supper, I'll usually have some type of ground beef or eggs.
Mm-hmm. Can you have cheese?
Actually wanted to go very strict carnivore just to see what it felt like. I have noticed two bursts of energy. I mean, I am back to feeling way more energetic
mm-hmm.
than I was.
Mm-hmm.
I'm building muscle, and I didn't think I had any brain fog, but I just feel clearer
mm-hmm.
for some reason.
That's great.
I eliminated the dairy, you know, several weeks ago just to see if I noticed a difference, and I did notice that second increase in physical energy. But a lot of people do dairy. You just have to kind of play around
mm-hmm.
with it. And
mm-hmm.
I did want to mention just two things. I don't want to open another can of worms, but I know some concern about going plant-based is for the environment and climate change and stuff like that. And that is a false premise based on false information. Animal husbandry, you know, regenerative pasturing of animals is much healthier for the planet and for the topsoil. The animals, you know, graze on their grass, they fertilize as they go, their hooves open up soil so new plants can grow, so they are making the soil nutritious.
Mm-hmm.
And
so we don't want to get rid of animals.
We do not, and there's a concerted effort to actually do that. Mm-hmm, but we do not want to do that. They will save the planet. Mm-hmm. And I did also want to mention, I would love to connect with anybody in the community that is interested in learning more or is currently doing carnivore. Mm-hmm. I know there has to be a few of us out there. and my email, if anybody is interested, is kcpitier@gmail.com. I'd love to hear from you.
Pitier, yes.
Kcpitier@gmail.com.
Well, I have so enjoyed talking with you, Kitty, and you really are a good spokesman for this, not only having learned just theoretically, but really trying it on yourself and feeling that you feel much better. Thank you so much for sharing your story on Who's in the Kitchen.
Well, thank you for the invitation. I've enjoyed it as well.